You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In Nora Ephron's final play, Lucky Guy, the newsrooms of New York's tabloids in the 1980s and 90s are playing fields where elbows are thrown as reporters and columnists jockey for the day's best stories, and bars are where they tell their war stories each night. At the center of this hectic, booze-soaked world is Mike McAlary, who wrote for New York Newsday, The Daily News, and The New York Post before he died in 1998. Lucky Guy is at the Broadhurst Theater through July 3rd. And joining me now are the director, George C. Wolfe, and Courtney B. Vance, who plays Mike McAlary's editor, Hap Hairston. I'm very pleased to welcome them both to our show today. Hello.
Hello. Glad to be here.
The play recreates the New York of 15 and 20 years ago. Was it, do you think, a more vibrant city in some ways, even if it was also considered dangerous and dirty?
Well, you know, that was George C. Wolfe's favorite time period, so I'm going to let him answer that. I remember that was for the first rehearsal. I remember you talking about, I loved this time period.
Well, this is about when you moved here, George.
It's about around the time when I moved here. And you know, every single, I think when you come to New York, that's your New York. And I love the chaos, and it was dangerous, but there, you know, if there was this incredible sense of anything was possible. And I'm not sure whether or not that was the city, and I'm not sure if that was me, but I wonder if people come here now with the rents being what they are, with so much of the city being very sanitized, I wonder if they still believe everything is possible. Well, is everything possible via living in Brooklyn or somewhere else?
Yeah, well, most of the people coming here today think that Williamsburg is New York.
Yeah.
But this production has a lot of energy. Was that in the way you put it together, or is that in Nora's writing?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, I think she very much so was writing about a time. The thing which is really fascinating to me about Mike McAlary is that as much as his name and his face are associated with New York, he's an outsider. He grew up in New Hampshire. So he brought this, oh gosh, oh gee, wow, you know, with a little rough language thrown in, I'm going to make it there. I mean, he's very much so, without doing it, he's singing, you know, Liza Minnelli. If I can make it there, I can make it anywhere. And that ambition, combined with the roughness of the city, combined with the crack element, combined with the rawness of the newsroom, it's all of those elements combined to create a combustible landscape. And I really love how theatrical Nora's imagination was in capturing that.
And this is, we're talking about a time when there was a daily fight for readers between the Daily News, the New York Post, and the upstart New York Newsday. In Newsday, a big success out in the island, but they decided to have a New York edition. It was making this push to become New York's third tabloid. Mm-hmm. A bit confused. I always thought that they were trying to be a tabloid Herald Tribune.
No, that's fascinating.
But do you think it was a better time to be a newspaper reporter or columnist? Now, I realize neither of you work in newspapers, but you must have thought a lot about it in preparing for this show.
Well, you know, for me, I was Hap Hairston wasn't to be found. There was nothing. I couldn't find him, and there was no. I tried to Google him. I tried to go to the library. I tried to find. There was nothing to be found on him. So
he was dead by the time.
Of course, he'd passed away, but. But in terms of any kind of research, I couldn't do any. So I depended a lot on Mr. George C. Wolfe for my moorings and my so his anecdotes and his stories, and just listening to everyone talk about their journeys during this time period and reading some of the other literature. But there was nothing that I could find about myself, about Hap Hairston.
Well, why do you think that is? Is it just because he was an editor?
Well, I mean, probably. There was, you know, Mac McAlary was the star, and he was on the periphery, which was the source of much of their bitterness and their rivalry, for lack of better words.
Well, they worked hand in hand. At one point in the play, Hap points out that he's kind of rewritten large portions of Mike McAlary's articles.
He had to. I mean, that's what an editor does. I mean, but as Mike McAlary became more of the star, the sense of bitterness grew. I mean, Mike slept on his couch for 3 and 4 days at a time during the week when he was in the city. They hung out. They were hanging buddies. But there was, you know, that Mike became bigger than life here in New York City, and that was a bitter pill for Hap to swallow.
Well, since you couldn't find him on Google, did you and the rest of the cast talk to some of the reporters and columnists who are depicted in the play?
That we did, but there was a by the time we were allowed to talk to some of the other people who are the characters who are living, because for, I don't know, what was it, George, for legal reasons why we couldn't talk to
deals were being still worked out.
Got it.
But also, I think it's very important that, you know, there's an equation of it's not a documentary, it's a play. Mm. So you have to find, I think, primarily what you're looking for and what the writer wrote, and then any other material that you can find, you use that to augment. But I think going back to the relationship between Mac and Help, I mean, I think it's all those complicated relationships between, you know, a playwright and a dramaturg, between a director and a producer, or a director and an actor. You come together for a finite amount of time, and you both are excited about the discovery. If you do this year after year, over and over, it becomes a breeding ground for, I did that, and you get the photos, and you think that you made me. Mm. Well, I did.
And you make a lot more money than I do.
And you make a lot more money. Mm. And they take your picture, and I walk out the stage door, thank you very much, of the Broadhurst Theater,
and they're
screaming to take pictures of the actor, and I just walk right past because I'm invisible to them. But, you know, it's that old dynamic that happens of who's visible and who isn't.
Right.
Well, Courtney, it must be great to be a star and have all those pictures.
Exactly.
The playbill for Lucky Guy includes a few paragraphs by Nora Ephron, who died last year, about falling in love with journalism. Is this a kind of appreciation of the newspaper business as it was then, and that's changed quite a lot over the last two decades?
Well, I know one of the things that we talked about, you know, George introduced for us in the rehearsal process was this. There was no swiping. There was no, I mean, you had to actually get out in the street and you had to, you know, you had to do some work. You couldn't sit around and wait for somebody to text you or email you. It was a completely different time. And
well, Nora had worked at the Post.
Nora worked at the Post.
But she'd worked at the Post even before this time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think one of her first assignments at the Post sent her out to cover the Beatles landing. Mm. And at one point when she and I were working on the play together, and I went, I asked her why she wrote it. And she said, what's better than hanging out in the bar with the guys?
Now, she also was married to Nick Pileggi, who was part of this world.
Yes.
Did you get to talk to him about it?
Yeah, Nick's full of stunning, amazing, wonderful, brilliant stories about the process and the camaraderie that's built. I mean, one of my favorite lines in the play, which seems almost archaic, at one point Mike McAleary is having a fight with one of the characters, and he says, no, I'm writing it for tomorrow. And it seems like such a ridiculous concept that you're fighting to tell a story tomorrow. Anything, the second, 3 seconds after it happens now, it's instantly on Huffington Post, or it's instantly in blogs all over the world. So there is no processing of information. Information is instantly put out there, and sometimes it's right and sometimes it's wrong.
My guests are George C. Wolfe, director of Lucky Guy, now at the Broadhurst Theater, and Courtney B. Vance, who plays Hap Hairston, an editor at both the News and the Post. Was he also at Newsday? I can't remember.
I don't think. Was he? He started at Newsday.
Well, at this, Mike McAleary, who's played by Tom Hanks, we should point out, at the beginning, seems almost superhuman. Was he a larger-than-life character?
I think there was just a purity of ambition and was unstoppable. Mm. I mean, and unrelenting, and probably a combination of savvy, naivete, and testosterone allowed him to go charging into places. One of the characters says he went places cops wouldn't go because he was, I think he loved journalism. One of the things that I met with his wife very early on, Allison, she said, you know, this was the only thing he felt he was good at. Mm. So this was his only chance to make a mark. So he approached it that way.
He was good at getting a story. He had patience. He also knew how to talk to people and get them to open up.
I think that was also, you know, the fact that he was, as George said, he was new and he was fresh. He came to the situation with no preconceptions. That's one of the things that Nick Pileggi talked about, that was a time when newspaper men came from the high schools and worked their way up, And, you know, nowadays everyone's got a Harvard degree and a Stanford degree. It was a completely different time. He was of the milieu. He was one of the guys. And because of that, he could go places with his testosterone and his just, gosh, why can't we do it? I mean, he said, why can't we go from one paper to another paper? I mean, everyone else was like, well, why not? I mean, we just don't do those kind of things. He said, why not?
Well, this is largely an Irish world, Irish male world. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Your character, Hap Hairston, is an exception. There is one other exception played absolutely brilliantly. The woman in the play, played by Deirdre Lovejoy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's one other character who is Jewish, but by and large, it's an Irish club.
Yeah, and that's something that's changed totally as mm-hmm. well in the mm-hmm. newspaper business. Mm-hmm. Can't imagine that anymore. Now, there was a 10-day workshop of the play in 2011. Was that when you became involved in Lucky Guy?
Yes, I was a part of that. I think there was maybe... I think Peter Scolari and Tom and I think were the only ones that were.
Has it changed much since?
Oh, completely. I mean, I don't even remember that version. I literally don't remember. All that for me, that was wonderful though, because I got a chance to meet and work for those few days with Nora. And she sent out this wonderful little thank you notes. Nobody sends out thank you notes. She sent out a thank you note. It was just, which I framed, by the way.
Well, George, you worked with her.
Yes.
And she finished the final draft of the play just 2 months before she died. Had you known that she was seriously ill?
Nothing. I mean, I found out that she was very ill literally the day that she died. She died later that night. And I had worked with her. Mm. In that December workshop, we had started working together earlier in September, and literally for 9 months, probably roughly about 9 months, she would come to my house at least once a week, and we would trade emails and sometimes mm-hmm. talk on the phone. And she was, and I'd give her tons of notes, and she'd come back with more work. And there was incredible ferocity and a focus, which I think she, from talking to her family, she's always had, but I clearly something else was fueling the intensity of her drive to deliver.
Well, it's appropriate that you did a lot of communication through email, because she did make the movie You've Got Mail.
exactly.
But a sense of death permeates this play. Mike McAleary's death, Nora's death,
John Cotter's
the death,
death
of two editors,
yeah.
Your character, Hap. Mm-hmm.
And the death of the newspaper industry in many respects.
Well, I wonder if she was
world.
Actually thinking about that, even if she didn't talk to you about the fact that she was ill.
Well, what's interesting enough, Nora first came upon the idea of turning this into a play is that she read. She never knew Mike McAleary, but she read his obituary, and she went, "This is a great story. I want to tell it."
Well, throughout the play, the actors break the fourth wall, either to give background on the action or to move the play along chronologically. Is that something that you're comfortable doing as an actor?
Well, it's what was required, but we had to, you know, George had to tell us there was a difference between storytelling and narration. And we were doing, initially, narration, essentially. And George said, no. This is, we have to tell the story. You have to tell the story. And energies, when some person says finishes something, you have to pick up with their energy or top their energy. I mean, it was a whole dance that we had to learn how to do, and it was so much for us all to.
Your character wasn't McAleary's editor in the mid 1990s when he, using some incorrect information from New York Police Department officers, wrote a column doubting the story of a young black lesbian who'd been raped in Prospect Park, and that almost ended his career. Would that episode have been different if Hap had been his editor?
Absolutely. I would have nixed that. It would have never happened.
Well, this is kind of an indication that McAleary couldn't see his own blind spots.
But I also think it was what was informed. He was also in the process of recovering from a severe car wreck, and I think there's this desire to prove, after you've experienced some sense of frailty, that you still got it. And that ambition takes precedent over, a lot of times, logic or truth or the integrity of an idea.
But months before his death, he broke the story of Abner Louima's assault and rape at the hands of four police officers in 1997, and that earned him the Pulitzer Prize. Was that a kind of redemption of sorts, do you think?
I think very much so. And also, I think that intrinsic in that story, it was Mac being back on the right side. Mm. Because in the beginning, it was, there's this whole line that gets repeated oftentimes, champion of the people. Mm. And the idea that the tabloids are celebrating and protecting and honoring the working class of New York, those without power. We tell the truth about the corrupt people with power, and we protect the people who are victim to corrupt cops or corruption. So the fact that he's back with Abner Louima is putting him back to his pure ambition.
And you get the feeling that, at least at that time, the press still had the power to shape the daily conversation here in New York. Less so today, although we're seeing it in today's news, so I guess it still happens. Courtney, this is your first time on Broadway in almost two decades, isn't it? You were in Six Degrees of Separation.
Mm-hmm.
Is it like riding a bicycle?
It's like riding a bicycle, but there's certain muscles that don't come back, and it's that the vocal quality that has to be strengthened, and that was what I had to work on.
The projecting.
But, mm-hmm. So, but everything else, you know, it just took a little minute to get back on the bike. But George he sped things up for me, so I had to get it.
Well, you do have to act bigger than you do when you're in movies and television.
Yes, you have to reach that fourth wall, the back wall. But this was a much larger piece than I think any of us realized. You know, I remember one day, probably maybe 3 weeks in that. Michael Gaston, one of the actors, and I looked at each other. he had all his papers in his hands, trying to move all the desks and everything. He said, "Courtney, I got to get these papers out of my hand." And I said, I know. I did it. I said 2 days ago. I just jammed it all in my head. I said, I realized that it was crazy. That because George is relentless, and
you have 17 cast members here. That's huge for.
That's 14, actually 14 on stage, and then we have 3 understudies. Yeah, but it's all 14 people embodying New York City.
Right,
and also, you know, he's switching newspapers. It's a fun. I love Act One because it has such an overt theatricality to it because it captures the energy of Mike McAllister. And then Act Two becomes a much more internal journey because he's become much more internal because of physical limitations. And also the city is different, speaking back to his false reporting. By this time, voices are out there that if they do something wrong with a certain ethnic group or they'll do something wrong with a certain group, there are people who are going to speak up. And it's the city. It is no longer just one tribe who is involved in the conversation. A lot of tribes are engaged in the conversation as well.
Now, you have directed dramas, musicals, one-woman shows on Broadway. You've directed the films Lackawanna Blues and Knights of Rodanthe. Do you have your next project already in the works?
Almost, but not quite, yeah.
Well, Lucky Guy has received 6 Tony nominations. Each of you have received one of them. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So are you looking forward to seeing the theater community on Sunday night?
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
It's going to be a blast.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
And then the play closes in July, the beginning of July, and that's not all that far off. Is there any chance it'll be extended?
I think that's it. I think that's
July 3rd.
July 3rd.
So you get to celebrate the July 4th weekend.
Exactly.
Thank you both so much for being on our show. George C. Wolfe, director of Lucky Guy, and Courtney B. Vance, who plays Mike McElhenney's editor, Hap Harrison. Mm. The play stars, in case you haven't heard, Tom Hanks. Has a wonderful cast. And I'm just so pleased to have had both of you on our show today.
Thank you so much.
Glad to be here.
Pleasure.